Hey, listeners, before we dive into today's episode, just letting you know, this was a live stream I recorded in the Flipchart Facebook group, and I was thinking about, should I edit things out or should I let it go? And what I've done is I just trimmed the beginning and the end of it, but I haven't edited the live stream. And the reason I haven't edited it is because you might want to do a live stream one day and you're curious, how does it work? How much interaction should you have? I'm not the expert here, but I wanted to share how I engage with people, how I tried to keep things on track, yet also responding to questions and comments that were coming through on the chat. So hopefully you find it helpful from a meta perspective and what live streaming might look like for you and the content as well. I hope you find that applicable in your facilitation world. Enjoy the episode.
Welcome to the First Time Facilitator Podcast. Whether you're a first time facilitator or a seasoned pro, listen in for tips and tricks to make a bigger impact at the next workshop you deliver. And now, your host, Leanne Hughes.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm your host, Leanne Hughes, and I'm here to help you create unpredictable workshop experiences that predictably work. We've got a different format today. I love experimenting into the future. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the show. I hope you're enjoying life. I hope you're enjoying work and everything that's going on this year. I hope it's all working out for you. And if it isn't, I hope there's some lessons in there and we're all in this together. Today's episode is an extract from a Virtually Possible 2.0 session that I was in with Marissa and Yuri. Now, Marissa was running a session called Activate Your Attention, How to Prime Your Natural Listening and Observation Skills for Meaningful and Rich Conversations. What we did was such a cool idea for an activity for the virtual world, using the concept of fishbowls. And the focus of the conversation was the craft of facilitation. So I thought it would be useful for you to listen to for both those reasons. One, listen to the activity, consider how you could use it for your session. Marissa describes what we do, and then we dive into actually doing it. And number two, Marissa and I reflect on five amazing facilitation questions that she created while my virtually possible partner in crime, Yuri Shilders, patiently listens and takes notes. It's part of the fishbowl experience. Marissa Agrasut is based in Singapore and is a practitioner, facilitator, and enabler. For the last 18 years, she's been working with teams, helping them understand, apply, and leverage tools, frameworks, and methodologies to optimize value creation. From consulting to co-creating, working with Fortune 500 companies to national ministries and non or not just for profits. During the 2009 Asian economic crisis, Marissa embarked on her first People, Planet, Profit business model venture. How cool is that? People, Planet, Profit. At that time, she was challenging the negative perception of plant-based diets, enabling reduced carbon and responsible consumption through a then pioneering circulatory systems thinking and purpose-led business. In 2016, she co-founded the Inceptory, working at the edge of conventional boundaries and assumptions, challenging notions of success in our current paradigm, helping future-oriented companies embed and further the business resilience imperative to their organizations. She's a graduate in strategic design management and harbors a lifetime fascination with the limitless power of intentionality, meeting at the intersect of where we sense, make, gain insight, find needs, opportunities, and originate ideas. Like I said, Yuri was also on the call. Yuri, the magic source, Shilders, is full-time Dutch, living in Singapore, and he's already been on at least three episodes of the First Time Facilitator podcast now. After having lived abroad, the US, the UK, China, and now Singapore for almost half his life, Yuri set up the Magic Source in Singapore. For almost half his life, Yuri set up the Magic Source in Singapore in 2013, and they facilitate meaty innovation projects. Over the past decade and a bit, he's worked on over 100 plus innovation projects for some of the top companies in the world. And on top of that, he runs a YouTube channel called The Magic Source. A lot of cool facilitation lessons in that. He's a host of the Rebel Rules podcast. He's fluent in Mandarin, owns over 100 sunglasses, and loves bringing his cats, Baz and Bex, into his creative videos. I hope you enjoy this one. I hope you get some inspiration from it. Once the conversation is over, I'd love you to join the Flipchart community on Facebook. It's a free community of over 1,100 facilitators sharing their great ideas, questions, challenges in the facilitation world. You can find a link to contact Marissa or Yuri in the show notes for this one over at firsttimefacilitator.com/episode145. Now onto the show.
So today what I was actually going to do was a fishbowl. I don't know if you know what a fishbowl is. Have you heard of it?
As in fishbowl facilitation?
It's a kind of like a technique. I don't know. Is it called fishbowl facilitation?
Well, fishbowl facilitation, I learned, and it's really all technique, is basically where a group of people doing something in the middle and the rest sit on the outside and observe. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Cool. But not within the physical space. The idea was to try and bring it online. I find that a lot of the times I think I'm a good listener, which actually I think I am. Actually, I have a very poor memory. I think I'm really good at listening. And so what the idea was actually to try and bring that listening to online, where a lot of the times I think it's really easy to tune out because you can either kind of like look at your other screen, your messages come through and nobody can really see, right? You can, to all intents and purposes, look like you're still
That happens, right?
Yeah. And so what I thought would be a good idea was to try something like a fishbowl, but online. Mm. So instead of obviously having a physical space, we would just divide the group into two, where you have one who's the set of observers and one who are the set of kind of speakers or players or whatever you want to call them. And I'd prepared some questions and topics that I thought were quite controversial. Because, normally you would do this in an organisation where there's something critical that they want to talk about, where perhaps there's tension, where there are really different opinions, where people can't find alignment. And so instead of sort of doing that, because we don't have a group of people all necessarily trying to solve one issue together where there's different perspectives, I chose and prepared some questions on topics that I thought were interesting and dear to some of us, or probably all of us, where we would divide the group and then have one group who would talk about it. So you divide into two, some talk and some listen, and then basically spend say 5 or 10 minutes with my questions. So the first group sits and I start asking the questions and they start talking and discussing in their group. The other observers just sit and listen for the 5 minutes, right? They don't interrupt.
Cool. And I just interrupted because I'm just thinking of the flow, like what this looks like, because I want to make sure I'm picturing it right.
Yeah.
So are we all, so imagine we have 12 people. Are we all on like a screen like this, right? So we have the little boxes. I'm trying to picture what it looks like on Zoom, for instance.
Yeah.
So then you say, whatever, these six people, the people with the shortest hair are observers, people with the longest hair are going to be discussing. You pose a question to the group.
Yeah.
And they, like, you know, camera, microphone, microphones on, and they discuss that there. Is that what we're doing?
Yeah. So those people within the kind of players or speakers group would be discussing. The other, say six, would kind of mute their microphones and then just sit and listen. And then we'd have a sheet or a piece of paper where you take points. So you would kind of take away the points from the discussion through your active listening. And then you'd also, though, not just sort of remember the points, but have the evidence. So why you came to that point, why you understood that point from the discussion. And for the entire sort of like 5 or 10 minutes where you were listening, that's all you would do. You just sit and listen. Because I think a lot of the times we are waiting to speak. Right. We are sitting there listening, waiting for ourselves to make the point that we want to make in relation to what the other person has said. So this is like an exercise in trying to harness and practice those skills, cultivate those skills of listening, like proper listening, you know, active listening. And then you have the evidence. So then the second round, maybe the same topic or probably a different topic if you're not the same group, as in all from the same organization. And then you do the same exercise. So the people who were first speaking become the observers or the listeners, and the people who were the observers and listeners then become the people who are discussing through the questions. And then after that, we come together and then share back, you know, your understanding of people's points and why you thought that, and sort of share the evidence around that. And then the other group will do the same. And then the idea is that you kind of share your experiences of listening and how you understood their perspectives, rather than this is what I think. Because often I think that's what the value I think we bring as facilitators is, inherently we also, as well as facilitating, feel like, well, we have a unique perspective to add to that, or we're there to challenge some of the thinking, which isn't sort of in itself wrong or bad, but this is to practice listening as a facilitator, but also in groups where there is sort of disharmony or yes. people get kind of triggered when talking at the same time, and everyone's like riled up and wants to kind of speak to make their point at the time someone else is making their point.
Cool. So what kind of question would you have? Because let's just make this real, just even if it's just for a couple of minutes. So Leanne and I are in a group. Imagine there's more people.
Yeah.
We're going to discuss a question because I'm just trying to see like technically what it looks like. So imagine that we're a group. So you pose a question, I assume, and you're going
to be observing. Okay. So I'll have to pose a question and be a speaker between, because one of us will have to be the observer.
Fine. Does that make sense? I'll be the observer then.
Oh, okay. Hold on. So...
And Juliana speaking.
Okay, so I've got a sheet here. Hold on, here. I'm just going to share my screen. Okay, here we go.
Can I take notes, by the way? Is that allowed
here? You can. So hold on. So these are the questions. Can you see the questions?
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to talk about this, and I'll read them out. But then this is a sheet that people would have, or at least, you know, create. Everyone's got this sheet, and they'll be taking notes, either kind of, hopefully not typing, because that doesn't really allow for listening, but pre-session, they either create this sheet, or we can set, or post-it notes, any kind of note-taking material. So you write each point in there, and then you write the evidence of what you heard, just to link it back, otherwise it's just a random point floating in the air. Mm. And everyone gets one of these sheets. And then Leanne and I would start discussing whichever the topic was. So in this case, the topic's facilitators. So the question is, the first question is, how do you normally describe yourself? So there's a discussion between Leanne and I. So I say to Leanne, well, I describe myself as sort of a consultant, a facilitator. And how about you, Leanne? What about you?
I usually start with podcast host first, which is funny, actually, now that you say that. Yeah, facilitator, speaker. Corporate trainer as well.
Yeah, okay. So there's a different set of descriptors, right?
Yeah.
And does that vary? Depends. So it's just like a conversation, yes. Right? So ongoing.
Yeah.
Does that vary? Who you
keep talking, Leanne. Like, give me something.
It's easier if there's a big group, right? Because there's often an emotional topic that's buried in work.
Yeah. And absolutely. I think you were going to ask me, does that vary? Absolutely. It depends on, and because some people, like if I'm at an event and people aren't from our world, they're like, what do you do? What I usually start off with is, you know how you go to those corporate training workshops and they're usually pretty boring? And they're like, yeah. So I always start with the problem when it's with people that don't know what we do. I go, well, I'm the type of person that I love running engaging workshops and I teach other people how to do that.
Yeah.
I kind of avoid facilitation there in that context.
It's interesting because, I mean, then the next question then is, what value, like, do you describe you bring, right? Exactly. Mm-hmm. You've just said it in a sentence is, the boring workshops, I make them fun. But some people they think they're consultants and they add kind of some kind of domain knowledge perhaps to a process, which is perhaps what I would say, right? Or I would say I do, but I also like to add fun in it and make it exciting and engaging and not just a one-way flow of information, right? So that people are actively learning and listening and things like that. But I think, I don't know, do you think that's a worthwhile skill? I mean...
Well... It's actually funny. A friend of mine, this is kind of related. It just what you said actually just spurred this on. The question number two is, so she's working internally and she wants to start her own consulting business. And so she's working on her value proposition, which is the answer to number two. And she messaged me today. She's like, it's actually easier doing the work than communicating the value that I bring. It's so hard.
It is.
But that value proposition is like, what value? And I don't know, like, because we can describe like what we do. What we do is super easy. Like, this is what I do. Like, I'll run
because it comes quite naturally, right? And so exactly, it doesn't feel like hard work.
The value. Oh, that's when I'm still like refining it. So, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's definitely something that's hardest. Like, for the longest time, what do you do? First is describing what you do and having them understand it. Then the value that you bring. And then I think that ultimately for me leads to like a question of like, is what we do a specialized skill, right? Because then how do you differentiate yourself? So I was like, how do you differentiate yourself?
Is what we do a specialized skill? You know what it is, but I wish it wasn't. I wish that everyone had the skills of facilitation, because we're doing it all the time. It's just not called that. So the second you have two or three more people like around you and you're talking about something or trying to make a decision, it's you're in facilitation mode. And a lot of people don't recognize that. And I wish they would, because it is, once you know that and you can describe what the skill set is and you can there's know that there's tools and models to help you drive an outcome, it's like you've, you know, Harry Potter, there's like muggles and that have no idea that wizardry is around. It's like, it's a wizardry skill, but everyone's a muggle. That's how I describe it. So I think it is specialized, but I don't think it's a tough skill to learn. It's more about being open to the ideas of it. Yeah. What do you say, Marissa?
Yeah. I mean, I struggled with this for a long time. I think that, you know, sometimes, like you said, it's probably something that comes naturally to a lot of people. And it's not necessarily that they have the frameworks, or they, you know, you could use any framework almost, as long as you're familiar with it. Or, I mean, I see all these frameworks as, and tools as just tools, right? As in, you could mash them together depending on what you need. If you were a carpenter, you wouldn't just use a saw, right? You would use a chisel and a hammer. And so that's how I kind of see all these things. And I do think it's sort of not specialized, but I think it can be learned. Whether or not you can learn it and deliver it well, I think is a different matter. But definitely, you know, everyone can be given the tools to do that. And then how you then use them is another aspect. But then you kind of, that's where the sort of value, I think that for me, the tension between like the value you bring versus like, is it a skill? It's, is there this sort of, is there like a magic sauce that you add to it?
I think you're absolutely right. They're aligned. And I think when it comes to a specialist skill is when you know what tool to bring into what scenario based on the experience and everything. Yeah. Like, so when I was a first time facilitator, there's all these things that I did not know that I know now that it's so obvious that I'd bring that into that context or environment or situation. But that only came with the experience.
Yeah,
and that's what makes it a specialist skill now, rather than just picking up a model and throwing, you know, a model at something else. I see. Yeah. That the, so I guess the speed at which you can do that in the moment and just to solve problems, I think, creates the speciality. Yeah.
And the next question, should we be licensed or held to an ethical code?
This came up yesterday.
Live stream. Oh, right. Sorry. I didn't hear that.
No, that's okay. I've answered every question first. So you should, I'll throw it to you.
I think there should be some guidelines. I think it's a bit like social media to me, right? You're in a position of, I wouldn't say power in that sense, but influence and to a degree of power. And I think that we are either directly, indirectly, intentionally or unintentionally kind of influencing the space that we're in, be that the materials we provide, be that even if we don't actually provide sort of specific materials, we are guiding a process and that can, I think, determine to a certain extent the outcome. So in that sense, I think there's some kind of ethical or moral responsibility. I don't know how far you would take it, but I think it's something that any professional should think about, because we don't always bring those conversations into business or into sort of certain contexts. So in a way, yes, I don't know what that looks like, but I think there's some kind of professional standards that we should be, professional ethics that we should be thinking about.
Yeah, it came up yesterday with just with the analogy was like, you know how doctors have the Hippocratic
oath.
Yeah. And that just sort of, it's like a framework that you sort of play to. Actually, I remember when I interviewed Michael Bungay Stania, Yuri knows I talk about him all the time. In our interview, I was part of this leadership program. It was like I had to deliver an off the shelf thing. So when you deliver someone else's content, I don't know how I wouldn't do that. But it was in the program, so I did it. And it was Simon Sinek's Start With Why. It was the first 3 hours, you know, you've just getting everyone together and then you're doing that, you know, why do you do what you do? I remember sharing that with, and it really caused, like in the workshops, people were like scratching their heads. Like, these are people, construction companies, you know, about 50 years old. They've never actually stopped to think about why they do what they do. And Michael said it best. He goes, that's a really destabilizing question. You know, it really is. Like, if you've just met these people, and they've got to answer why they do what they do. Like, and so when I think about that and standards, I don't see that a lot in terms of, I hated doing that part in that at that time because it was destabilizing. Yeah, so I think I'd love to see something like that, like an oath, or we can just refer to push back to clients, you know.
Yeah, I'd love that. Yeah, I think exactly, and I think when you're doing any kind of change management training, it's a bit like marriage counseling, but on a much bigger scale and a much more complex scale. And I think often we're not given, I mean, even as facilitators, even as good as we are, unless we kind of have those specific frameworks and tools, then actually it's quite hard to do that work because it's a lot of human emotion psychology.
Big time.
And you're digging, you're literally digging, you're starting to clear the opening the cupboards and turning the lights on, and you're saying, well, what do you think of this? What's all this stuff that you've accumulated over the years? And what are all these issues that you're working through? And, you know, you're challenging their existence, right? You're questioning existence.
Yeah. Well, even like the word delegation, like you talk about the hacks of delegation, but delegation is a really deep-seated issue. It's got a lot to do with trust, you know, that no one can do it better than I can. All that, so that is deep-rooted into someone's like belief system, value system, the way they've been brought up. And then you're going and going, yes, delegation, and why it doesn't work is because everyone just approaches it at that level. But then to go at a deeper level, I there absolutely needs to be something ethical around that. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks. I agree. Yeah,
Mary, you've been doing a great job listening. If this is me listening, I would want to jump in. They're great questions.
And then the last question, what do you think could be done to improve our professional practice?
That's why I started the podcast. It's why I started the podcast, because the brand of workshops, the brand of meetings is so bad around the world. Mm. So my response to that was, instead of, you know, working with partnering with someone official, was just starting my own thing and trying to drive that through finding out what's going on in the workshops that's great in the world and sharing that. So I think I'm sort of trying to do that. That's my little contribution to improving the practice of facilitation.
Yeah. Yeah.
How about yourself? What do you think?
I'm going to stop sharing. I think there are a lot of things. I think what you guys are doing is really good. And I think it's something, as I said, in the kind of video, I was really struggling with. Everyone's sort of okay to accept substandard, boring, disengaging online sessions. And I think, as we've evolved as human beings, our capacity to sit and listen and engage changes, right? It requires different things. It requires a different level of interaction. It requires a different type of, skill. And I don't think we have that. We're not taught that. And nobody really talks about it. They just kind of assume that it's effective interesting to keep going like that. And then after a while, I don't think I can even remember what the kind of session is about a lot of the time.
Yeah.
So I think all the stuff that you guys are doing is really good. So yeah, all the skills, all the sharings really help with that. And bringing out all the stuff that probably a lot of us are thinking in those sessions, but totally. But just like sitting there sort of bursting and wanting to kind of like, ugh! So I think that's kind of that's how I think of it. So that's our discussion. Yuri, I think you've done really well because you're normally quite chatty. Not that that's a judgment.
You're on mute, Yuri.
No, I'm not actually. I'm just...
So now what would normally happen is obviously we'd go on either on another topic, or if it's the same topic that was dear to Yuri's heart, then he would have a discussion. And then
you don't share the observations back yet.
We can normally do it, but because normally it's the same topic. If it's an organization talking about their perspectives on the same thing, it gives the two groups a chance to speak, you know, without people responding straight away. And I think often people need to respond immediately because they don't feel heard, right, in those situations. But I think when everyone just holds on to what they need to say, then they get to hear the other side. And sometimes through listening to what the other side has to say, some of those things diminish or dissolve without the back and forth, right? You just hear, you're present to that, and then you don't actually need so much. You start to process through that. So that's how it would normally run, that both.
So I can't share back my insights. I've got like
a whole... Well, no, you can. You can. No, you can now, because we're not going to do that. Because there's only three of us. go for it. What would you like to sell? What did you notice first?
I'm just trying to understand. So we've just done this discussion. You've had a conversation. I've taken notes because you've given people some time to take notes, right? Then what do you do with that? Do you just kind of go share back a couple? Do you go one by one? Like, what is the structure for sharing that back?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the size of the group and obviously how much time is assigned to it. I think personally, it's good because if you do it in too structured a way, sometimes people are forced to say things when they're not ready to say, right? I think that's part of this is trying to give people the space they need to kind of process and share back. I would, if it was me, I would sort of hope that somebody, as we talked about in your guys' program, hope that somebody shares first, but be ready to kind of ask somebody specific to share back first. So maybe someone who's maybe not so vocal some of the time, or somebody who seems like they may have that. But I think a lot of those underlying dynamics, if you're in an organization or you've been working with them, you would probably know where those issues lie, right? You'd have a sense of it. But sometimes obviously you just have to go with what you can sense with the rest of the people.
Cool. Well, a couple of things that we could do here to make sure that people start speaking is things like go in alphabetical order of their names, go from shortest hair to longest hair to shortest hair, go from shirts from lightest to darkest. I'm just, for people watching this video later on, there's like a couple of things you could do to just get the ball rolling. The talking bear, as in I've got mine, I've finished mine, I'm going to hand it to Leanne to speak next, something like that. Yeah. Easy works. You could go for all who wants to go first. I've noticed that in a virtual session that takes even longer than physically, right? Because I think people miss out on a physical energy of people. Sometimes you know when it's your time to speak. Anyway, so you could kick that off. But what would you then ask? So you kind of go, what did you guys observe? Or do you ask for insight? What do you ask? What's the question then?
I'll probably firstly ask how people felt about the exercise. That's because, I mean, for people who've never done it, it might come naturally to some people. Some people are natural listeners and really good at kind of holding that. Some people have natural kind of, I want to share, and I think, you know, I'm really eager to kind of get other people rolling as well. I'd ask people how they felt about that kind of their position as, firstly, as the observer. And then how did they feel, obviously, as the player or the speaker?
Cool. As an observer, I thought it was very interesting because it's like the longest I've ever not talked my entire life in 43 years. So it was an interesting experience to me.
What I'd say, and I reckon to even make the dynamic of observer and participant even more dramatic, I would put Yuri's video off. So it feels like he's not even with us.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah,
yeah. So all like the observers turn off their videos because they're still there and they have to take notes, right? Because they've got to report back.
Yeah, but and they can see,
really,
right?
Create some contrast with who's in and who's out. Because like even I was moderating, I could see Yuri like kind of nodding and like I was moderating. I don't know if I was intentionally aware of moderating things along the line because I could see him nodding or agreeing and then point up, whereas we haven't got that feedback loop.
Interesting. That's a really good idea. Actually, I was going to start the session, had there been more of us, with us just all turning our videos off and mics off and just sitting, you know, kind of like not meditation but kind of like a mindful space for 30 seconds, just to get into that space of I'm ready to listen because I mean I'm highly easily stimulated by I can sing your backgrounds, you know, the things as we did and kind of I think we open that space like that, but I don't think we have to stay in the space for the duration of that, at least when we're getting into the listening mode. So that was I was going to start with that, but there's just three of us, so I thought, well, we're just chit chatting anyway. No,
that's fine because I think we get it, right? I think you know, when people, even when they watch this video, I think they get what the picture you're painting. What's nice about what we're kind of riffing off here is that, like I said, the original activity is from a guy called Roger Greenaway or something. It's like 1970s. He did it. Basically a lot of the leadership, team models, change management, all these kind of training-esque activities.
Yeah.
Come from him. He's like one of the founding fathers of all these different
types. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't know.
Maybe he just coined the names. I don't know. But Fishbowl.
He's still alive?
We'll look him up.
Get him on the podcast.
Roger, if you're watching this, I hope you are.
I have to Google it. Anyway, after I'm listening to you, Yuri.
Thank
you. I'm very aware of my
that,
listening
Leanne.
Skills now as a
Thank
participant.
No, but my point is the whole fishbowl facilitation came from the principle that certain people are in a fishbowl, and in the physical setting, you'd have people sitting in the middle doing something, talking and stuff, and then other people sit around it. So, Leanne, to your point, by turning off the camera and even muting your mic just in case you don't get any noise, that is probably conducive of that activity, exactly, because I think you'll be less distracted talking. What were you looking at? What are you
looking at? Talking about listening, give me 1 minute. Sorry, somebody's at my door with a delivery.
Well, go for it. Get it. It's fine.
Sorry.
Yeah, I collect.
Don't be sorry. I do this all the time.
Okay, just leave it there. Thank you. Sorry. Sorry, yeah. I was listening.
No, don't be sorry. This happens all the time. I was like, oh, sorry, my cat just walked in. Yes,
yeah, but that's acceptable. Somebody's asking for a response. I can just ignore the cat normally. I'll just shove them off the table.
Yeah, hello, we have a package for you. So my point is, I think it's really conducive of this activity by doing exactly that, by turning off those cameras. Mm. I think then people, then the listeners will not be so aware because they'll be looking at their own screen kind of going, yeah. Oh my God, my hair like this. I think that will be super conducive of this activity. And I really like the fact you start off with maybe just a listening activity. I think that in general might be a really nice way to start, like, all turn off your cameras and maybe play a couple of sounds or something and then say, what did you hear? Just to tune people into really listening or something. I like that a lot.
Oh, yeah.
I think there's a lot you can do with this kind of activity. Can I share back some of my insights now?
Yeah, please.
Okay, I've got so many, so I'm just going to do
No comments on our sort of us as people, right?
No, you only want me as you as cats or something. Yeah. What would you rather have? So one thing I've noticed in both of you, which is really interesting, both of you use, particularly when it comes to ideation, looking to the future and sharing ideas, you both get very metaphorical. So Leanne talks a lot about, I don't know what the hell a muggle is, but something about Harry Potter. Then Marissa, you said something about marriage counseling. And you talked about kind of a carpenter using a chisel and a saw. The moment both of you start getting excited about ideas, you use more metaphors. And there's actually a whole book, and I forgot what the book is called, but I'll find it at some point, which explains why that is. Basically, once people start talking in metaphors, there's a lot going on. There's like more emotion going on behind it.
Interesting.
So you both do that interestingly. Leanne starts talking about ideas, her hands come into the screen more. You start pointing at things more. And the moment we talk about something you don't like or you're not that excited about, your hands get out of the screen and you look down more. All right, so your eyes kind of move down.
The video and you'll be like, watching yourself.
Go look back at it, really, every time you do that. So you light up at ideas with everything. Like, you literally go up and you move your hands. And the moment when it comes to, let's say, limitations or something that we shouldn't do, or in the past I did this and that didn't really work, it does exactly the opposite. And I've got one more on Marissa. Marissa, you nod a lot. So you literally are looking at your screen. And based on from what I can see here, you're really listening. So unless you hide your, you know, kind of Instagram very well on the side, it really feels that you're listening. And my guess is whenever Leanne's talking and vice versa, you feel that you're really listening to each other. I think that's what it felt like.
Yes, and as you can see, Leanne and I are both nodding at you.
So those are some observations.
Wow, nice.
And now what? And then what you do? Then you switch, you wrap it up.
I mean, we would have swapped to have the other group talk and listen and bring observations. But if we were talking about something that was important to the group, then obviously we kind of unpack that more through the discussions that we have as a group. And I think when there's the space, you know, people are given the space to talk and express the entirety of perhaps their idea or their issues, then there's supposed to be a lot more that you can kind of work on, rather than it coming to loggerheads and then people kind of getting stuck at certain points or disagreeing at certain points, because you hear more of everything. It's a bit like reading, right? For me, if I want to get the idea, I'll scan through everything first and then go back where I got stuck. Whereas some people, which is quite a traditional way of learning, is that they'll read, and as soon as they get stuck, they'll stop there until then they just get stuck at that point and then never kind of move forward. Whereas I think, is that how you work?
I used to, yeah. Okay. I used to feel like that. Like writing, I would literally start from top left and write everything perfectly.
I like write the end before I start the beginning.
That's just good practice. But as growing up, I never did that.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of how it helps as well, that you get to hear sort of like the bigger picture instead of getting caught up on the details and then never moving beyond that. And I think even with innovation, right, they say to get everything out first and then go and refine, rather than getting everything perfect and getting stuck at the beginning, because then you also have no energy left to move. You've used all your energy at the places where you got stuck at the start, and then by the time you need to get to the end, you're probably like, I'm just quite tired by now.
I used to always lose points on writing essays because we'd have to write it with a pencil first, kind of your draft. And then once you had that ready, you had to then copy with a ballpoint pen. And that's the copy you could hand in. And because I would be overthinking my writing with every word and every line, it would be grammatically perfect and you name it. I would always miss out. I would always lose like 2 points just because I would hand in my draft with pencil and the whole thing is you lose a point or 2 points just by handing in a draft, things like that. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, there's a good Malcolm Gladwell podcast on this, Revisionist History. He talks about the LSAT exam, because it's really time-based. And he was talking about how some of the best lawyers are the ones that don't do well on the LSAT, but they take their time, because all the LSAT does is it's a really quick test, answer these really complex questions in 25 minutes. Mm. And it's really interesting, actually, just talking about timing and everything else.
What's that book? Is it a book?
Podcast. I should put the link when we share the video.
Revisionist history.
Yeah, but talking of podcasts, Marissa, I know Yuri's up for anything, but you, Marissa, how would you feel if this was released as a podcast on First Time Facilitator, what we just did?
Like, what, you mean the audio version, or you mean doing it again?
Yes, that's a podcast.
Just like releasing just the audio. I think people would love
it. If people do find it interesting.
They'd find it very interesting.
It's such a cool model. Like, I just think of all the different applications for doing something like this. I think it's amazing. Thank you for bringing this to us and the world now.
Well, thanks. I mean, thanks for showing up. I think it wasn't something we'd sort of planned. I hadn't sort of advertised it. I said to you, I was like, oh, I don't know. But yeah, I'm happy to if it's easy. And I think it's one of those things that I think a lot of people have experienced in a physical workshop, right? Or in some settings where there are discussions. But I think the term fishbowl is quite well sort of used for these. But I'm not sure that many people have done it on a digital or in a workshop space when it's online. So yeah, if that's interesting, definitely.
Yeah, I'm already thinking of the episode title.
Yeah, and I think what is nice about this one is, and I think Leanne would agree, is we can quickly, and whoever's watching this or listening to this, you can see the application of this in many other places. You've just given us one way to do it. I can already see like reshuffling it a bit. So for instance, as I was asking before, like, what is the order? Like, do you discuss group one and group two and then you do all the share back? Mm-hmm. And I was thinking,
that's a better way to do it.
If I were to do it, well, I was actually thinking the opposite, and I'll tell you why.
All right,
I would do one round. So let's say you've guys been talking. I now would have gone and shared some of my insights. And the reason I would do that first is because you then as a facilitator can elicit some of the answers, because it might be so that they didn't do it, not that they didn't do it right, they didn't think through the insights. So they might have been really superficial. You could go a little bit deeper, kind of go, so what do you think what that means and what have you noticed? And by doing that in the first round, you're giving the second group an example of what success looks like, which will then make it a bit easier for them to go, I see what they're looking for. I see what we're doing.
Yeah, so you get to learn off the first group in a way.
Yeah, and again, it's not the right way. I'm just thinking there's different ways you could run it, and it's really exciting. I like it a lot.
Cool. Yeah, no, thanks for the input. It's always good because when you're sort of experimenting, it's always, you can never see it for the first time, right? When you're kind of trying it out online versus when you get other people to experience it and their inputs on it and their kind of take on how they think it would work well or where they could improve it. So I think,
And you've just given me an idea for a video. I'm going to do a video this weekend for the magic sauce for a creative video, because this could be an energizer. I'll tell you what the energizer is. Black screen, right? Just black screen with some kind of visual rendering. And it's a game. It's a little energizer. And it is, we're going to play you a couple of sounds without writing anything down. Remember all the sounds you're hearing. Like, can you recognize the sounds? There's like, you'll hear 12 different...
like birds or something, yep.
Or drill, whatever it is. Like, you hear 12 different sounds. You have to really focus with some noise in the background. And then can you spot all the 12 sounds, animals, whatever it is, something like that. I think that's
a really good exercise, actually. I think that's a really good exercise. Because...
And you can land that in either as just a bit of fun. The other one you can land it in is just going, we just want to tune your listing, something, whatever.
And that could really be, you could do that, split that via topic as well. So let's just say you're doing a presentation skills workshop. You could get like the 10 best speeches ever. Like, you know, Martin Luther King, you get like a Churchill quote. And you go like, who said this? And like epic quotes, even from movies, right?
People on the team. So imagine you work with a team of 10 people.
Oh,
you just have a recording the voice. You just take snippets, kind of go, who said this?
Yeah, like you say, have Churchill, and then you've got Marissa. So you know what I mean? That would be so awesome. I love that idea.
Churchill sounds drunk. That's the difference.
Does he?
Hello, he's always a bit.
I thought I'd stop the podcast there. That was a good point to hit pause and end this one. So after that, Marissa, you and I were just talking and having a great time. I hope you picked that up in the conversation. It was really fun. Thanks to Marissa for sharing that. Thanks for Yuri for being a participant as well and for observing. I hope you found that really useful. Look forward to bringing you another show next week. Ciao.